Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Sri Bhakti Bhai Bhava ki
jai.
Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai.
Getting the family back together ki
jai.
Janita Goprema, all glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to Sri Guru. Good to see you all. I was wondering where you were, Martha. All the old times. Yeah, we had maybe about 20 devotees came last night, but hardly any of you fucking by bar for us. So I was wondering where everyone was. But I'm happy tonight that everyone's returned. Okay, good to see you all. Okay, so I think just to recap last night we did the summary of the course, the orientation level for the course, the VTE standards and so forth. We went through the 12 angles of Shastric study, we did the class norms, and we discussed the key memory verses for this section, the Bhagavatam, that you're coming up. Key memory verses for those who were not here last night. Brahma Samhita verses 36, 37, 38, and 39. Brahma Samhita. So these are the four verses for this section which you are required to memorize. Now, I have preaching presentation topics for the closed book exams, the preaching presentation topics. If you don't have them already, just take one and then just pass it on. Hopefully we'll have enough for everyone. Those who were here last night, they got them already. For those who did not, then you can get them tonight. Hopefully there'll be enough for them. So last time we also discussed, just on a practical level, the formation of the various groups. The groups, there being four group leaders, Nalini Prabhu, Siddharaja Prabhu, Ananda Balabha Prabhu, and Chandra Balabhi Mataji. Now that all the group leaders are here, hands up if you do not have a group and you require a group leader. Okay. One, two, three, four, two, one, two, seven. Okay. So two Prabhus. You can go with Nanda Prabhu. Is that right? I think you're up. Well, put your hands up just on one. Okay. Two Prabhus. Right. You go with Siddharaja Prabhu. Is that right? That's okay. Two Prabhus. You go with Ananda Balabha Prabhu. Practical. Okay. And you go with Chandra Balabha Prabhu. Okay, so everyone has a good one. I think that's everyone. Did everyone get the handouts? The closed book topics? Is there any left? Yeah. Did anyone else need it? I think everyone has. Okay, that's good. So that's the basic situation in terms of the running of the course. I think they're all the topics that we covered. At the end of the lesson, I'll leave the registration form here, and then just come and write your name, because there's a few new students like that, so you can just write your name here, and then I'll mark up every week the attendance. We've said that the requirement for the course is a 50% attendance, so that means that we require that devotees attend at least once a week, twice a week if you can. Understanding that we're on weeknights now, it may be more difficult for people. So if you can't come both nights, at least try to come one night as much as you can. Just so I don't have to ring you up. So please put your names down at the end of the class like that. And the most important feature of the course is to please be punctual. Always be on time.
Do not come late. The course begins at what time?
10:30.
Everyone together, we will chant together. The course begins at what time?
10:30.
All the people who came in late, did you hear that? What time does it begin?
10:30.
And one more time, just for Prabhupada said you repeat it 3 times, you will not forget. What time does the course begin?
10:30.
Oh, very good. Thank you for coming.
And for those who have just arrived today, the course begins at 7:30. And we will be punctual
as much as possible, like that. So please try to come.
So at the end of the lesson, then just put your name down, because I don't think this probably isn't going to fit everyone's name. There's a lot of devotees here, but please come and just write your name down so we can mark down,
like that. Closed book exams. I think I'm running out. I'll give one to.
Does anyone not have the open book examination topics who just came in? You can share with your wife.
Okay, so I think everyone's got. Okay, good.
So please find a comfortable place to sit. Please try to come on time. The rest of the year. If possible. Not many runs on 5 minutes.
Okay, that's good.
So I think that there's a few devotees who still are not here, some of the regulars. Or the bhagavad gita group, I guess. Is he in the country?
Yeah.
That's right. Just let him know that we're started in case he doesn't know. Anyone else who's picked up? Not
here.
Hopefully. I think that's most of
the chat.
Usha, okay. Let Usha know. There we go. Rafa, the last thing, he's overseas, so. Okay, I think everyone else is.
Yogesh.
Okay, just let him know.
Mohan.
Where is Mohan?
He's here.
He's here. Okay. This is Govinda's room. We travel in India together. Mohan and Govinda and myself, we had some fun. We just need Krishna. Once you're in Krishna, ask me who wants to come for the course. Yeah, be good. If you ask me, you might know. Okay, so tonight we're going to go through the first 15 chapters of Canto 4, which we covered last year, in order to refresh our memory and bring us up to date for the remainder of the canto, the remainder of the chapter of the fourth canto. We'll begin Canto 4, Chapter 16 next week on Monday night, and hopefully our aim is that we will finish. You know how many times we've spoken about being on top? Oh, classic.
Think of
Buddha
Mother again.
Yeah, we'll have a Buddha Guru coming next week. That's okay. You have a chair?
Yeah, I'm fine.
As long as you're comfortable with that. Okay. To be honest, I'm so attached to all the members of the group, even if you come at 8:30, I'll still come. Okay. Please don't do that as a habit, but. So tonight, the plan is that we'll finish Canto 4 this year. As we said last night, there's another Bhakti Shastri course beginning, I think in March, and there's a second Bhakti Vaibhav course beginning in April, I think, Gangeshwara Prabhu's teaching. His plan is to teach the whole 6 cantos of Bhakti Vaibhav in 2 years. So Prabhupada required that whoever would desire to get Brahman initiation, second initiation in ISKCON, they should have the Bhakti Shastri degree. So it is your responsibility to get that degree. Like that. We're offering a course here in Melbourne so that you can get that degree. And for those of you who would like to study the whole 6 cantos and get your Bhakti Vaibhav certificate in 2 years, Gangeshwara Prabhu is offering a course like that. And for those of you who would like to get your Bhakti by Bhav credentials in the next probably 3 years, then please come on Monday or Tuesday night. Okay. Our course is a little bit slower. Just because that's the way our course is. We move a little bit slower. But it's your choice. You have 3 courses to choose from. Like that. So if you feel inspired to come to this course, you're more than welcome. And if you need to get your degrees in the other courses, also attend those courses or do whatever you feel is good. We're trying to offer as many courses as we can now, so devoted to get the proper qualifications to study. Okay. So we'll go through chapters 1 to 15 tonight, just to recap. Since my accident last year, my memory is not like it used to be, so you'll have to help me. Like that. I studied today, but I used to study and I used to remember a lot. Now I'm finding it hard to remember. Like that, I don't think I'm going to be the same as I used to be. I don't know if it'll come back to that level. So,
you'll come back. You'll come back.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if it'll come back to full or not. It's okay. I
mean, 6 months.
Yeah, maybe it will return fully. I'm not sure. But, you know, I can still do something, but I'm just not quite like I was before. So you can help me as we go through, because many of you can remember many things. So as we go through the 15 chapters, help me to remember what we need to tell us. Okay. So we'll begin with chapter 1. Chapter 1 is called The Genealogical Table of the Daughters of Manu. Now it was mentioned in Canto 3 that Swayambhu Manu appeared from the body of Swayambhu Manu appeared from the body of Lord Brahma with his wife Shatarupa. So they appeared directly from the body of Lord Brahma. Now when they appeared, they begot 5 children: Uttanapad, Priyavrata, Prasuti, Akuti, and Devahuti. Now, Devahuti's child, she had different children with Kadamamuni, but her principal child was Kapila. And he was mentioned in the 3rd canto of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, in the beginning of the 4th canto, Maitreya Muni then asks Vidura to please describe the other children of Swayambhu Manu. So he mentions the other 2 daughters who were not described yet. Their names were Akuti and Prasuti. Now the youngest daughter of, I believe it's Prasuti, is it? It's one of the 2, I think it's Prasuti. The youngest daughter of Prasuti, her name was Sati. And Sati, she married Lord Shiva. So Vidura asks Maitreya Muni, please describe to me this pastime of Sati marrying Lord Shiva. So that brings us up to this particular pastime. Now Canto 5 and Canto 6 will also continue with the descriptions of Maharaj Uttanapad and Maharaj Priyavrata. The remainder of Canto 4 will touch on, I believe, Uttanapad, his descendants, and the 5th canto will describe a lot about Priyavrata's pastimes, like that. So this will be described as the Bhagavatam continues. One of the 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Manvanta, the description of the Manus. And their descendants, how they populate the universe. So this is why the 1st chapter of the 4th canto is called the genealogical table, coming from Manu, Swayambhu Manu. So it is the history of the universe. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the history of the universe. Goes back to the original members of the universe and their descendants, and the various pastimes they perform, and the appearance in their dynasties of great personalities, such as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Jagya appears here, Prithu Maharaj is an incarnation, Kapila Muni is an incarnation. So the Lord appears within their families, in their dynasties. Now chapter 2 is called
Daksha curses Lord Shiva. Now this pastime we studied at the beginning of last year, this pastime describes the main point of this pastime. You may remember it when you think back to our examination. What was the main point of this pastime? To avoid Vaishnav Aparada. Right? I think we still have some notes from last year. These are five of the obstacles to pure devotional service that result from committing offences to Vaishnavas. That if you offend devotees, these are the five results that you will suffer from. Right? You'll become crooked. People, they offend devotees and they become crooked in terms of how they deal with other devotees. Develop bad character like that. Faithlessness. You will lose your faith in Krishna, in the devotees, by continuously blaspheming them. We see this. Devotees who commit too many offences, they lose their faith in devotees and devotional service. Like that. They become attached to things that destroy their faith in Krishna. Their material desires increase because they obstruct their ability to receive Krishna's mercy in devotional service. They can become slack in devotional service. You can lose your desire to make serious advancement in Krishna consciousness because you become affected by Vaishnava Parada, and you develop a taste for criticizing other devotees. And as a result, Krishna withdraws his mercy and you develop a slackness in devotional service. And finally, pride in being devotionally advanced. You may be an advanced devotee, but if you offend others, you can become proud. And then through that pride, you can lessen your position as a devotee. So, these are some of the results of committing Vaishnava Parada. Now, Daksha, he became very proud. Because he thought he was a very important personality. He's one of the original Prajapatis, or the original progenitors in the universe. His duty was to populate the universe. So he entered into a great assembly. And in that assembly, there were great personalities, such as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Now, Lord Brahma is Daksha's father. Therefore, he did not stand up when Daksha entered the assembly. But everyone else in the assembly stood in respect to the effulgence of Daksha, his great potency and his power. So, the only person who did not stand was Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Now, Lord Shiva did not stand because at that time he was absorbed in trance. He was absorbed in meditating upon Krishna. He was situated on the Shiva Sankara platform. So he did not wish to disrespect Daksha, but he did not realize that he had entered the assembly. Now Daksha, he had married Sati, who was the, sorry, Lord Shiva had married Sati, who was the daughter of Daksha. So normally, out of etiquette, you offer respect to the father-in-law. But he did not offer respect. But it was not because of a disrespectful attitude or not following etiquette, but he was absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Now, we must learn to recognize the advancement of other Vaishnavas. If you cannot understand who is more advanced than you in Krishna consciousness, then you may commit offenses. We must learn to recognize, this is the symptom of being a Madhyam Adhikari. Prabhupada expected us to rise above the Kanishta Adhikari platform. A Kanishta Adhikari thinks he is very advanced. And because he thinks he is very advanced, he does not offer respect to other devotees. This is the defect of the Kanishta Adhikari. He will not offer respect to the other devotees. Whereas the Madhyam Adhikari, he understands and he differentiates between different levels of Vaishnavas. Those who are more advanced, he offers respect to and service to. Those who are equal, he offers friendship to and engages in the six loving exchanges with. And those who are less advanced, he shows mercy to. He tries to assist them in advancing in Krishna consciousness. So this is the necessity, and this was the expectation of Srila Prabhupada, that everyone in ISKCON would rise to the platform of Madhyama Adhikari. This means preacher. Kanishta Adhikari does not preach. Maybe preach, but they're very proud and very materially absorbed. But the Madhyama Adhikari, then he preachers, and he differentiates different levels of Vaishnavas, and he treats them accordingly. We must learn to treat devotees according to their position, otherwise we will commit offences. So Daksha, he failed to understand the exalted position of Lord Shiva. Why? Because he looked at the external dress of Lord Shiva. He saw his external appearance and he thought, this is tamasic. One of Lord Shiva's names is Tamasi. Tamasi means one who is in charge of the mode of ignorance. But he is not affected by the mode of ignorance. Even though he may appear, his vesh may appear to be resembling the mode of ignorance, but he is not covered or affected by that mode. So we cannot disrespect Lord Shiva. Okay? He is an exalted personality. But Daksha could not see that. He simply saw the devotee according to the external characteristics. Just like even with Srila Prabhupada, one of his disciples, one of Prabhupada's disciples even said to Prabhupada, well, if you are a pure devotee, why do you need to wear glasses? Right? If you're a pure devotee, why do you have... No, Prabhupada said, this is material. Right? Sometimes Prabhupada would forget slokas when he was giving class. And Prabhupada would say, what is that sloka? And the devotee said, well, Prabhupada, if you're a pure devotee, how can you forget the shloka? Prabhupada said, this is material. This is not seeing the actual position of the devotee. So we must be very careful when we're associating with little girls whose names are... What is this little girl's name? Right, so we must be very careful when we associate with different types of devotees. We must learn to understand their spiritual advances. Not that we try to bring down the devotees to a lower level than what they're actually on. But we must understand the actual adhikar, or the actual qualification of the devotee, and offer respect to them according to their qualification. That is the symptom of a devotee. That is the symptom of a Majjhimadhikari. He understands the qualification of different devotees and he gives them respect according to that qualification. He does not see them as being material. He does not judge them according to external characteristics. Oh, they come from this particular country. They have this particular birth. They have these particular habits from previously. Or they may have committed these activities before they became devotees. All of these types of mentalities, they are offensive. Right? Or we may see that some devotee has some material defect. They have poor eyesight, or they have a limp, or something like that. But in your mind, or in your activities, in your speech, if you judge a devotee according to external characteristics, then that is aparad. And that will block your spiritual advancement. So Daksha, he did not give proper respect to Lord Shiva. He saw Lord Shiva as being a material personality. So then, Daksha, he cursed Lord Shiva. He said to Lord Shiva, you are a very low person. He even said that he has eyes like a monkey, which you would not normally say to a pure devotee, unless you are very puffed up and very proud and arrogant like that. So he criticized Lord Shiva and then he left the assembly. And Lord Shiva did not react, because Lord Shiva was absorbed in Krishna consciousness. But Lord Shiva's followers, they became very angry. And one of the principal followers of Lord Shiva, his name was? Nandishwara. He cursed the followers of Daksha, the Brahmanas. And he said, you Brahmanas are smarters. You're simply attached to rules and regulations. You're simply attached to external performances of yajna. You are attached to sex life, to creating progeny to fulfill the universe, but you have no actual spiritual qualification. So he said that I will curse you, that you will all simply become materialistic in your vision. And you will beg from door to door, like ordinary material, and you will not discern what is good to eat and what is not good to eat. And practically we see that's what's happened these days. The Kali Yuga Brahmanas are like that. People in India acting like they're Brahmanas, go out and beg from door to door and eat all sorts of things and call themselves Brahmanas. Srila Prabhupada described that when he was young, there was one man who lived down the road from him who would get up in the morning, put on saffron, and walk around the neighborhood and collect collect donations like that. And then he would come back at the end of the day, put on his white dhoti, smoke his beedi, and look after his kids. And during the day, dress up in saffron like that. So this is what Brahminical culture has become in Kali Yuga. So this is coming from the curse of Nandishwara. But then Bhrigu Muni also became very angry, and he cursed the followers of Lord Shiva. And he said, all of you will become tamasic. You will grow your hair, you will become atheistic, you will become mayavadis. You will grow your hair and matter lots, you will be very dirty, you will imitate Lord Shiva, but you will have no spiritual realization. And practically we are seeing these are the Shaivites that we see in, like at the Kumbh Mela. Now they dress up in ashes, they become very tamasic, they smoke ganja, they imitate Lord Shiva, but they do not have spiritual realization. And ultimately they are mayavadis, they are atheistic. So this was coming from the cursing and the counter-cursing. Srila Prabhupada warns us to control anger. Anger is very detrimental. Prabhupada warns us that if there is an angry atmosphere, then we should leave that place. Because as soon as the anger becomes manifest, what takes place? The more anger you put on anger, then the more it grows. That is the nature of anger. Just like we told the story, I think, last year of Krishna and Satyaki and Balaram, who were travelling together in the middle of the night. So they stopped in the middle of the night and they set up a camp. And Satyaki said to Krishna and Balaram, he said, you take rest and I will guard the camp for 2 hours. And then when you have finished resting, after 2 hours, I will take rest and we'll take it in turns. So throughout the night, each one of us will take a shift, 2 hours each, and we'll stay up and guard. So while Krishna and Balaram were resting, then one big Rakshasa, he came. And he said, I will eat your friends, I will devour your friends. And Satyaki said, you will try, but no one shall get past me to harm Krishna and Balaram. So Satyaki, he began to fight with the Rakshasa. And the more angry he became, the more powerful the Rakshasa became. And they fought and fought and fought for 2 hours. But at the end of the 2 hours, the Satyaki was unable to defeat the Rakshasa. And the good thing about Satyaki was that at the end of the 2 hours, because he was a very punctual person, then at the end of the 2 hours, then he said to Krishna and Balaram, yeah, it is your shift now. So then he fell asleep immediately, being exhausted from fighting for 2 hours. And then what took place? Then Balaram, he took his shift. And at the same time, that Rakshasa appeared. And then he said, I will devour your friends. And Balaram said, you will try. But he fought with him for 2 hours, and the same thing. He fought and fought and fought for 2 hours. At the end of the 2 hours, he was completely exhausted and he took rest. And then Krishna woke up. And then Krishna, he began to guard the other two. And then the Rakshasa came. And he was very angry. He said, I have fought with your two friends, and now I shall devour you, and then I shall devour your two friends. And Krishna just began to laugh. And Krishna said, you can do whatever you want. And the Rakshasa, and he said, no, I will eat them. And then Krishna just laughed more and more and more. And he said, you say you can do so many things, but you have no power. And the more he laughed, the smaller the Rakshasa got. And he got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until finally he was only so big, Krishna tied him up in his dhoti. So then in the morning, Satyaki and Balaram, they woke up. And they said to Krishna, they said, last night while you were sleeping, we had to fight with a Rakshasa. And we fought him for 2 hours, but Satyaki said I could not defeat him. And Balaram said, I also could not defeat him. I fought him for 2 hours, very, very strongly, but I could not defeat him. And then Krishna, they said to Krishna, did he come when it was your turn? And Krishna said, this guy. And he said, this guy, tiny little Rakshasa. He said, is this who you thought? And they're looking at him. They said, yeah, this is the guy. So who was he? Anger, right? Krodha, right? The more we become angry, the more anger gains power. But if we diminish anger, right, then everything becomes like that. We have to learn this art. Right? Either leave the place or do not become angry and create more anger in an angry atmosphere. You have to learn to diffuse anger. Or else just leave the place and allow the anger to diffuse itself and then come back. So Prabhupada says, be very careful about avoiding angry atmospheres. Then,
where did you get that from?
Where did I get that from? I heard Gurujan Prabhu tell that story. I think he said it's from Mahabharata. That's what I heard him tell that story. So. I think he said it was from Mahabharata. Okay. So then, after the cursing and the counter-cursing took place, Lord Shiva became very despondent. He was very upset. A devotee does not like to quarrel with others. Right? Devotee does not enjoy arguing with other devotees. He likes to avoid those situations. So therefore, feeling that there was too much apparat and counter-cursing which had gone place, Lord Shiva quietly left that place. And then Lord Brahma thought this is very bad. Something very negative will take place now. Okay. So then the next chapter is called? Chapter 3 talks between Lord Shiva and Sati. So Sati, she comes to Lord Shiva and she says, my father is holding another yajna. And all my mother and all my sisters and all my friends will be there, I would like to go. But Lord Shiva advises his wife. He says, it's better we do not go. Because your father is inimical towards me. And your father does not like me. And if we go there, he may say things which will upset you. And if he commits offences towards me, you will become very angry towards him. Your heart will be broken. It is better we do not go there. But Sati, she cannot control her desire. And it is natural for a woman to want to attend festive occasions. So therefore, she paces up and down. And she becomes very disturbed in her mind. But the main lesson which Prabhupada emphasized at this point is that we should listen to our superiors. If our superior is giving us good advice, we should listen and we should follow. That is the lesson here. Yeah? I won't say the wives should listen to their husbands. Yeah? Because otherwise they won't bring me any sleep. The rest of the course. Okay. But you should listen to your superiors. Work out who is your superior and you should listen and obey that person. I can say whatever I want because my wife is not here. But you should listen to your superiors. Right? This is the lesson which Prabhupada draws from this pastime. It is necessary. Right? If the superior is giving good instruction, you should listen. You should overcome your false ego and you should listen to someone who is more qualified. So, unfortunately, Sati was unable to do that. So she went to the assembly of Daksha, her father. And while travelling to the assembly, she went on Lord Shiva's carrier, Nandi. And she was accompanied by Lord Shiva's followers, and they played kettle drums and bugles and conch shells, and they put a canopy over her, and it was like a royal procession. So she entered the assembly, and everyone noticed that she was coming. She got off Nandi the bull, and she entered the assembly, but Daksha did not pay any attention to her. He was so envious and so hard-hearted, he would not even offer affection to his own daughter. This is the nature of envy. When we become proud and we become envious of others, we will not even offer a respect to a qualified personality. So because Daksha was envious of Lord Shiva, he would not even offer respect to Sati, his own daughter. So she became very upset and she began to publicly criticize him. So Prabhupada points out that this is valid criticism. When one devotee is publicly defamed or spoken ill of, then we should defend that devotee. We should say, no, that is not correct. That devotee is not like that. They do not have this kind of disqualification like that. So Sati, she defended Lord Shiva and she said, you do not understand his position. He is the most exalted of all Vaishnavas. Vaishnavanam yatashambhu. He is the greatest devotee, so therefore it is not proper for you to blaspheme him. But Daksha was so hard-hearted that he ignored his daughter. So she became greatly affected by the behavior of her father, not giving her any affection. And she sat down amongst the assembly and she self-combusted herself, raised the heat within her body by yogic potency, and she burned her body to ashes. And then her body disintegrated. And there was a great cry of dissatisfaction within the assembly. Especially her mother was extremely upset. And she said to Daksha, she said, you fool, because you're so hard-hearted, and because you have witnessed the suicide of your own daughter and have not done anything, he said, then you, very soon you shall lose your own life. But Daksha, he was so proud and so affected by the material energy and so absorbed in trying to perform the yajna, he just continued with the yajna. So the yajna went on. But at that time, the followers of Lord Shiva, they were going to attack the assembly out of anger for Sati being disrespected so badly. But then Bhrigu Muni, he created different like demigods, fire demigods from the sacrificial fire, and they attacked the followers of Lord Shiva and drove them away. So then they returned to Lord Shiva and they told Lord Shiva about what had happened. So then we have the next chapter, which is called? Is it? Chapter 3? What's chapter 4? What's chapter 3 for? Oh, the talks between. Okay, so then chapter 4 must be when Sati actually goes there. Chapter 3 is the conversation, and Sati goes there in chapter 4.
Would the relation of the followers of Lord Shiva after Sati went on was tight, or?
What was their reaction?
They started attacking them. As you told, Sati was right when she was starting to push.
Yeah, this is the correct etiquette. That when a devotee is harmed, then we should protect that devotee with equal protection. Like that. So if the devotee is physically being harmed, then we should attack the person who is attacking the devotee. Like that. So because Sati had been physically harmed by her father's treatment, then they were right to attack like that. We should not tolerate any offence to a devotee. Like that. So that means chapter 4 is called? Sati quits her body. So then at the end of that chapter, then Sati returns, the followers of Lord Shiva return to Lord Shiva. What is the next chapter called?
Frustration
of the sacrifice of Daksha. Okay. So then, Lord Shiva, he is told, informed by his followers, that Sati has given up her body. And he becomes extremely angry. It says that he bites his lip in great anger. Right? He stands up and he begins to laugh like a madman. And he takes one of the hairs from his head and he throws it on the ground. And then the great demon, Virabhadra, appears before him. And Virabhadra folds his hands and he says, what shall I do? What is your command? He said, go to the sacrificial arena of Daksha. And he said, kill Daksha. Right? And all of his followers. Destroy the sacrificial arena. So then, Virabhadra and the other followers of Lord Shiva, they begin to go towards the sacrificial arena of Daksha. Now Daksha, he had not been affected up until now, but when he saw the dust cloud coming towards him, from one part of the universe, he became extremely perturbed. And he realized that he was about to suffer the reaction of offending Lord Shiva. So then Virabhadra and the others, they ran into the assembly and they began to desecrate the entire assembly. Now they smashed the entire yajna stali, the entire place, apart. So it is said that Bhrigu Muni, Virabhadra grabbed his moustache and ripped it off. Right? And then there was one demigod, I think his name was Pusha. Was that him? Who showed his teeth? So Pusha was smiling. When Lord Shiva had been offended by Daksha originally, he was smiling like that. So then he had his teeth smashed out by Virabhadra. Smashed his teeth. And then the other demigod, I think his name was Bhaga, then he moved his eyebrows. When Lord Shiva offended Daksha, then he removed his eyebrows. So then he grabbed his eyebrows and pulled them off. Right? And then finally he grabbed Daksha himself. Right? And he took Daksha and he put him on the ground and he took one like sword and began to cut his neck. But Daksha was chanting mantras in order to protect himself from being decapitated. And finally, Virabhadra became very frustrated. He picked him up, took him over to where the goat's head was cut at the beginning of the sacrifice, put his head in there, and cut his head off. And then at that time, all of the hobgoblins and ghosts and all the followers of Lord Shiva, they cried in great joy. They said, very good, like that. And then he grabbed his head, he threw it into the south corner of the arena. And then Virabhadra and everyone, they smashed everything apart, all the demigods and all the sages fled away, and then they all returned back to Lord Shiva and they said, everything is done, everything you've asked us to do has been performed, right? And then chapter 6 is called Brahma satisfies Lord Shiva. So at this point the demigods and the sages have realized they've committed a great offense, so they approach Lord Brahma. And they say to Lord Brahma, we've committed a great offence towards Lord Shiva. What shall we do? Lord Brahma advises them. He says that whenever you commit an offence to a devotee, you must go to that devotee, bow down, offer your respects to that devotee, and beg his forgiveness sincerely, with tears in the eyes. So at that time, then they approached Lord Brahma, and with this advice, they all followed Lord Brahma and went to visit Lord Shiva. Now when they approached Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, he thought that Lord Shiva may still be angry. So he began to smile and he began to speak in a very pleasant way. And he said, please forgive these demigods, these sages, who have committed a great offence towards you. They did not know what they were doing. So at that time, then Lord Shiva, he begins to speak and he says that actually they are just like children. They're just less intelligent. And because they are less intelligent and childlike, then we will not take this offence very seriously. Right? So he forgives all of them. Like that. But he advises them, you must be very careful in the way that you deal with Vaishnavas. Right? And he says that Lord Brahma says to him, please make the sacrificial arena as it was before. Everything is becoming inauspicious. Please rectify the situation. So then, Lord Shiva says, I will rectify the situation, but I must give them all some punishment, just to remind them of their previous ill behaviour, so they do not act in this way again. So then he says, Daksha shall get the head of the goat. Right? And Bhrigu shall, what did he say about Bhrigu? Was that Bhrigu? Oh, that's right, yeah. Bhrigu got the beard of the goat, like that. Daksha got the goat's head, right? Then Pusha, who had his teeth smashed out, then he could only eat something which is like very soft and very difficult to eat, like that. And the other person who had his eyes taken out also got something, like that. Yeah, he has to see through the eyes of the followers, like that. So then he gives them different... So the senior Vaishnava, when we commit some offence, the senior Vaishnava may give us some punishment. But that punishment is the mercy of the senior devotee in order to rectify our improper attitude. And when we're rectified, then we may have to carry some reaction still, so that we do not forget about our improper behaviour. Mm-hmm. So, Lord Shiva goes back, he rectifies everything, Daksha comes back to life with the head of the goat, and what does he say? He says, I've committed a very great offence to you. I understand now your actual position, and because now I understand who you are, I will not commit such an offence again. Please bless me that I can perform the yajna properly. Lord Shiva gives his blessings, and all the demigods, they perform the yajna, and everything becomes auspicious once again. Now what is chapter 7 called?
Sacrifice performed by
the sacrifice performed by Daksha. So Daksha begins to perform the sacrifice, and then as Daksha places the oblation into the sacrificial fire, then who appears? Lord Vishnu himself appears, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, and everyone in the assembly offers full obeisances, and then they all stand up and everyone is completely silent. They cannot say anything. Everyone is just struck because they cannot even, they can see the Lord, but they cannot even understand his spiritual form and his amazing opulences. He is beyond the comprehension and the imagination of any of them. Even Shiva and Brahma are completely silent. So then, the Lord speaks and he instructs Daksha. He says, understand that Shiva and Brahma and myself are the three presiding deities of the three gunas. Right? We are the guna avatars. So they must be offered proper respect. Do not disrespect Lord Brahma. Do not disrespect Shiva. Do not disrespect Lord Vishnu. Because they are the guna avatars. They are the Supreme Lord, his empowered representatives. Just as all the demigods, the Vaishnavas must not offer disrespects to the demigods. This is stated by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasa Rita Sindhu. We must not disrespect the devatas, the demigods, because they are great Vaishnavas, they are great devotees. So he says, do not disrespect these personalities. And then all of the different demigods, they offer respect to the Lord in chapter 7. And at the end of chapter 7, there is a benediction given. That anyone who hears this pastime shall be, I can't remember the specific benediction, but everyone should be greatly benefited and purified by hearing this pastime of Lord Shiva and Daksha, the Daksha Jagra. So then, Maitreya and Vidura, Vidura says to Maitreya, now please tell me about the other members of the family. We've heard about Devahuti and her descendants. We've heard about Akuti, or is it Prasuti? Prasuti and her descendants. Huh? Now please tell me about the other members of the dynasty. So then he describes her two sons.
Probably one question.
Yeah.
Lord, Daksha didn't respect Varshiva, but Prabhumani is very great. He's quite advanced. Why didn't he say something to Daksha?
Who, Bhrigu? Because he was defending, Prabhupada explains, he was defending the Brahmanas. Because the immediately after Daksha spoke the way he spoke, then the followers of Lord Shiva began to curse the Brahmanas, and then he wanted to protect the Brahmanas. So for some reason there was some improper mentality on his behalf also.
What I'm trying to know is, before all this thing started, followers of Lord Shiva, when he was started blaspheming Lord Shiva, why would he say something that time?
It is said that Lord Brahma interjected, because he was the superior of Daksha. Bhrigu was more like an equal, so maybe he did not speak at that time. But Lord Brahma tried to pacify Daksha. And then when Daksha went to leave the assembly, Lord Brahma said, just, but he just left like that. So I don't know why Bhrigu did not say anything. It seems that Bhrigu had some improper mentality also, because he was also punished by Lord Shiva. Like that. So then, Vidura wants to know from Maitreya about the other members of the family, such as Uttanapada and Priyavrata. So even though Uttanapada is the younger brother, and he had a son whose name was Dhruva, but because Vidura wants to hear about pure devotional service, the Bhagavatam is about pure devotional service, he immediately says, please tell me about the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. So then we hear from chapters 8 to 12 about the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj, right? Who is the most exalted devotee. Now,
can you open the door?
Yeah, it's too much stuffy. Huh? Can we keep it open or something? Shield, do you want to put a chair in there? Get a chair and put it in the door so it will stay. There's a chair in the back. Does that make it a little better?
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't realize it would be so hot, otherwise we could have brought some fans. Maybe next week if it's hot we can bring it. same. So then, we hear about Dhruva Maharaj and his two mothers. His actual mother, whose name was? Suniti. And his stepmother, whose name was?
Suruchi.
So his brother, whose name was? Uttama, was sitting on the lap of Maharaj Dhanapada, his father. And then Dhruva Maharaj, who was a young boy, who was only 5 years old, he came to try to sit on the lap of his father. But his stepmother Suruchi said, "You cannot sit on the lap of your father, you are not born from my womb. If you do austerities in your next lifetime, you may be born from my womb, and then you can sit on the lap of your father." So he was only a 5-year-old boy. But he became very angry. Just like sometimes when 5-year-old children do not get what they want, then they become very angry. So this is the nature of the Kshatriyas. They had this very powerful determination, virya. So he became very angry. It said he began to hiss like a snake. He began to bite his lip. And he went to his mother crying. And his mother said, what is taking place? And the servants of his mother told his mother that your son has been disrespected by your co-wife. So she also became very upset because her younger wife, the younger wife, was the favorite of her husband, Uttanapada. And she was favored by him. And Uttanapada was something under the control of his second wife, who was very young and beautiful. So therefore he neglected a little bit his elder wife, Suniti. So therefore, she said to Dhruva, she said, "You should be equipoised. Do not be affected by these things." But Dhruva was very angry. She said, "If you want to fulfill your desire to become the emperor, then you should go to the forest and you should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So taking his mother's instruction with great determination, this is the main lesson that we must learn from the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. If you want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, you must become
determined.
Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Tivrena means very serious, very intense, right? Very focused in your devotional service. If you want to make advancement, you have to become Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. So, Dhruva Maharaj, he became very intense in his desire to become the emperor of the universe. So he went to the forest. At that time, his guru, whose name was Narad Muni, he understood the pastime which was unfolding. So he also went to the forest. And he said to Dhruva, he said, "You are just a young boy. So because you are a young boy, then this will be too difficult for you to stay in the forest and to meditate on the Lord, to perform Ashtanga Yoga. It is better that you return home, and you can do this when you're older." Now this is the, Prabhupada explains, the nature of the guru is to test the disciple. The guru will give tests to the disciple, to test the sincerity, to test the caliber of the disciple. Is he actually sincere in Krishna consciousness? So the guru will give some tests. So the test was given by Narada. But Dhruva became very determined. "No, I will stay here and I will fulfill my goal." So Narada, seeing that he was very fixed, then he gave him instructions. "Be equipoised. Do not become so disturbed by the dualities in this world." But Dhruva Maharaj, he said, "I am too passionate. I am a Kshatriya." He said, "Brahmanas can follow this, but I cannot follow." So when we are preaching to someone, we must give them the advice that they can accept. You cannot preach to someone something they cannot accept. We must become expert as preachers. According to our attachments and our conditioning, then we give instructions to the people according to their ability to accept our instructions. So therefore, he said, "Okay, if you have this desire, then you go to the forest called
Madhuvan,
which is in
Vrindavan.
It's one of the 12 forests of Vrindavan, right? So if you go to Madhavan, you'll see this place called Dhruva Kila. It is a small hill. It is the exact place where Dhruva Maharaj performed his path from. Has anyone been there? You've been there. Dhruva Kila. Yeah, very small hill in Vrindavan, in Madhavan. So you go there, this is where Dhruva performed his pastimes. So he said, go to the hill, and when you get to the forest of Madhavan in Vrindavan, the holy dham, because devotional service is most effectively performed in the holy dham. So therefore we must make every endeavour to visit the holy dham of Vrindavan, of Mayapur, of Jagannath Puri. Hopefully we'll all go there together this year in November. That is our desire. So, Dhruva Maharaj, he went to the holy dham. Just like I've been living in Nandagram for the last 2.5 months in separation from the Bhakti Vaibhav course and all of you. And I can tell you, I've only been back here for 24 hours, but I feel like I've come back to the holy dham. Even though that is the holy dham, but when I come back here and I get this association, I feel so much benefit. So we have to reside in the holy dham, the holy place, in the sanctified place. And this is how we become advanced in Krishna consciousness. This is how Krishna consciousness, all the service we do, performed in the holy dham, you get millions of times more benefit. So this temple is a very, very powerful place. So all the service we do in this place, we get extra benefit. So Dhruva Maharaj, he began to perform his devotional service. So Narada said, chant the holy name and meditate on the form of the Lord. So he began to worship the deity in the forest and taking his bath 3 times a day in the Jamuna and practicing strict celibacy. He fixed his mind and his consciousness on the Lord, and he reduced his eating just to fruits and berries. And then over time, it says that he reduced it further and further until he was only breathing air, practically speaking. So then, following the Guru's instructions, Prabhupada explains, this is the secret of success in the spiritual life. If you want to go back to Godhead, you must follow the instruction of your Guru. If you do not follow the Guru's instructions, you will never go back to the spiritual world. So he followed perfectly the instructions of his Guru, and in one lifetime, he achieved success. Prabhupada said we should try to emulate Dhruva Maharaj. Even though we are insignificant, as Prabhupada describes, we should try to follow his example and finish our business in one lifetime. Become serious in our Krishna consciousness. So then, Narad Muni, he saw that Dhruva Maharaj was so absorbed, then he went back to the capital and spoke to Maharaj Uttanapad, who at this time was beside himself with grief, because his son had gone to the forest at the age of 5 and he did not know if he'd been eaten by wild animals. So Narada said to Uttanapad, your son is perfectly okay. He is fully absorbed in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He will become fully Krishna conscious within 6 months, and at the end of his tapasya, he will come back to the capital. So Dhruva Maharaj became so perfect, and he became so fixed in his devotion, his bhakti, that the weight of his body began to push down on the earth, and his breathing began to suck all of the air out of the universe. So the demigods, feeling there was no air to breathe in the universe, they went to Lord Brahma and said, what is taking place? Lord Brahma said, this is the son of Uttanapad. We will go and pacify him. So then, Dhruva Maharaj, he got direct Shakshat Darshan, or direct vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord said, I'm very satisfied with you. And Dhruva Maharaj said, I'm such a fool that I've approached you with material desires. But now that I realize that my material desires are insignificant, now that I've met you, I feel very ashamed and very embarrassed. This is what the Bhagavatam teaches. Akama, Savakama Va, Moksha Kama, Udarati. Regardless of what your desire is, you should go to Krishna. And Krishna will purify you of your desires, and then he will give you himself. So Dhruva Maharaj, he approached Krishna with material desires, but Krishna removed those desires. He gave himself. He said, you will have to rule the earth for 36,000 years. And then at the end of ruling the earth, then you will come to Vaikuntha Loka. Now that Vaikuntha Loka in this world is called Svetadripa, or the Pole Star, which is only seen from the northern hemisphere. You cannot see it from the southern hemisphere, but it is the Pole Star. It is the northern star, and it's said that it always stays in a fixed position. Even in the Western astronomy, they recognize that this star is always fixed. And it describes in the Bhagavatam that all the other stars, even the sun, are circumambulating this star. Because it is a Vaikuntha planet, even within this material world. And by circumambulating, they're offering respects to the Lord who is residing on that planet, and to Dhruva Maharaj, who is a pure devotee of the Lord. So then, after completing his tapasya, Dhruva Maharaj came back to the capital. And then his father retired and he became the emperor. Now, what is the next chapter called? Chapter 9. Dhruva Maharaj returns home. Right. So what is chapter 10 called? So one day, his brother Uttama was hunting near the Himalayas, and he was attacked and killed by one Yaksha. Yaksha means people from Nepal. Right? They're very powerful. Prabhupada says they are descendants of the Yakshas. Do not make them angry. Right? If Bhakti Mahaprabhu is cooking in the kitchen, right? Don't make him angry. I've seen it. Not pretty. So the people from Nepal, they are descendants of the Yakshas. Right? They have mystic powers like that. Just like in the Indian army, right? Who are the most powerful soldiers? The Gurkhas. The Gurkhas from Nepal. Right? And even the Sultan of Brunei, his personal bodyguards are the Gurkhas. Right? These are very powerful warriors. They still have some shakti, some potency. So they're very powerful warriors. The Yakshas, one of them killed Uttama, the brother of Dhruva. But then Dhruva became very angry. And Prabhupada explains, this is once again the danger of anger. Be very careful. It's something. What does Rupa Goswami say? First verse of the Nectar of Instruction, which is one of the secrets to bhajan. Vacho vegam, manasa, krota vegam, jiva vegam, udarapasa vegam. Anger is one of the six urges. It must be controlled. We must learn to control our anger. Otherwise it is a great impediment to our advancement in Krishna consciousness. Even for an advanced devotee, not even an advanced devotee, a pure devotee like Dhruva Maharaj, this pastime shows us how we must be very careful about anger. Right? Becoming angry amongst devotees. You must learn to control anger. Anger can destroy your devotional service. Can cause you to say things you would not normally say. Right? Usually anger manifests between husband and wife. How many times a day do you feel Gujarati? Right? It happens all the time. Right? The husband and wife become angry and then you say things you would not normally say. Normally you would not say certain things. But then when you're angry, you lose control, and what happens? You commit aparadha. You commit offence. Right? And this is a great hindrance to your devotional service. You must be very careful to control your anger like that. So Dhruva Maharaj became very angry, but then instead of killing one Yaksha, he went and challenged the entire city. And then I think it was said in the Bhagavatam, 14,000 of them came out. And then he began to fight with all of them. And he ended up killing thousands and thousands of them. Until Swayambhuva Manu, his grandfather, came to him and said, please do not do this. So this is unjust. Right? Your brother was killed, that is fair enough, but not that you killed 14,000 Yakshas. Right? So then he says, you've committed a great offence now to Kavera, who is the Lord of the Yakshas. You must go to him and apologise. Right? So the next chapter is called? What chapter are we up to? Which chapter is that? What's that called? Okay, so then, so we're up to chapter 12. What's chapter 12 called? So in the beginning of the chapter, he goes to Kavera, and then he begins to offer respects to Kavera. No matter who we are in this material world, if we offend any devotee, we must be humble enough to go and apologize to that devotee. Right? It doesn't matter if that devotee is less advanced than us, or has a lesser social position than us, or it doesn't matter what the situation is. If we commit an offense, we must beg forgiveness. That is Vaishnav Achar, or etiquette. Right? We must, otherwise these offenses, they will hold you back in your devotional service, sometimes for lifetimes. So Dhruva Maharaji went to Kavera, and Kavera gave him blessings. He said, no, you will return back to Godhead. So Dhruva Maharaji ruled the kingdom for 36,000 years, and when he saw the kingdom was being ruled properly, he gave the kingdom to his son, who I believe his name was Utkal, and then he went to the Himalayas, to Badrikashram, to perform tapasya and fix his mind upon Krishna. At that time, while performing tapasya in Badrikashram, the Supreme Lord, the two servants of the Lord, I think it was it Nandi and Sunandi? I can't remember their names, but they came on a Pushpa Vimana, a huge transcendental aeroplane from Vaikuntha, and they came before him. And all the other sages in the ashram were amazed. Dhruva Maharaj took bath, offered respect to everyone, sought their blessings, and then he entered onto the Pushpa Vimana, and he stood on the head of
death.
Prabhupada says there is no fear of death for devotees. No, because devotees are transcendental. Prabhupada describes our devotional service, it is immature at this point. So I'm like an unripe mango. But when we become mature, then the mango becomes fully ripe. So when you perform devotional service with a pure attitude to the best of your ability, then at the time of death you have nothing to fear, and simply you will go into your eternal devotional service in the spiritual realm. That is the potency of this process. If we become Tivrena, Bhakti Yogena, serious like Dhruva Maharaj. That is the lesson from this chapter. Then the next chapter is called?
I probably have one question.
Yes.
If you do anything wrong to anybody, you should ask for forgiveness. I mean, does it apply to Vaishnava only or to the others too?
To non-devotees? Yeah. It's described that that is jiva aparad, or aparad just to any, just like if you cut down a tree unnecessarily, or you hurt an insect or an animal. Prabhupada said a devotee will not even like to hurt an ant. So even a devotee, even a non-devotee, someone who is a human, non-devotee, if you offend them, then that is an aparad also. So then that may also block your devotional service to some degree.
And what if you can't find them?
What if you can't find them? Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says you chant Hare Krishna very seriously, and then eventually the holy name will forgive you. Like that, so.
And the other thing I wanted to say is Suniti gave a very nice lesson to Guru Maharaj. That though your stepmother has offended you, hurt you, but please do not wish any bad
to others. Yeah. Very good instruction. Mm-hmm. Even the others, they talk to you so much, but still you should not wish bad to others.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise that bad feeling of you
come upon
you.
Yeah. So Dhruva Maharaj, he did not feel anything bad. But because they had committed some offence to him, then she died in a forest fire looking for her son who was killed by the yaksha. So if we commit any offence to devotees, we will get the reaction in the future. Okay.
Because Sumiti was burning inside, and that's why she had to go...
The forest fire.
Yeah, forest and
burning. Okay. So chapter 13 is called...
Descendant of Guru Maharaj.
The description of the descendants of Guru Maharaj. So then we hear about the lineage which comes from Guru Maharaj, and eventually within that family appears a Shakya Vaishavata, or an empowered Jiva, who is empowered by the Lord himself to perform the activities of the Lord, or the pastimes of the Lord. The name of this great personality, who is an empowered representative of the Lord, is Prithu Maharaj. So Prithu Maharaj, he was churned from the body of King Vena, who was the son of Maharaj Anga. Now Maharaj Anga, he gave birth to a very impious personality. Srila Prabhupada explains this is the necessity of performing Garbhadan Samskara. Right? When you procreate and you create a child, then your consciousness at the time of birth will attract a certain type of living entity. So if the husband and wife are in lustful consciousness, they will attract someone who has material desires. But if they have pure consciousness, they will attract someone who has attraction to bhakti. So therefore, Maharaj Anga, he gave birth to this impious boy whose name was Vena, who was very cruel. And Maharaj Anga, he became so despondent about his son, who was such a bad son, he left the kingdom. Vena took over the kingdom, but he was a very bad king, so bad the Brahmanas, they performed a jagya, and they chanted mantras, and they killed him. And then in order to establish the rightful king, they then churned the thigh, or the body of King Vena, and from that came Prithu Maharaj, and his wife, his name is Archie. So Prithu Maharaj and Archie, they came. What is the next chapter called? Yeah.
Vena's mother, she was from the direction of her father, Sunita.
Yeah.
And her father was sort of a death
personified.
So the thing is, if the person is from that kind of family, and if you do Pravadan Sanskar, then that rectifies the situation?
Yeah, if you are, even if your parents are not so good, then it's still if you purify your consciousness, then you can have a pure child.
But if his mother's consciousness is
not good, be very careful about who you marry. check the family out. especially if they're from Agra.
To check the
background
of the family.
Yeah, check the background. Anyone from Agra, Winchelsea, all those places, go check it out.
No.
Not for you.
That's not good for me.
Yeah, well, you should have just done some more research before you.
You are becoming personal, I'm asking you.
Oh, is your husband from Agra? You should have told me, I didn't. He's from Agra. I don't know. I thought he was from Dallas. I didn't know.
You know everything about us.
Okay, so where are we up to? Up to chapter 14. 14 is called? Story of King Vena. Okay, so tell us about how King Vena was a cruel king. And then the 15th chapter is called?
King Prithu's appearance and coronation.
King Prithu's appearance and coronation. So this describes in chapter 15 the perfect example of a perfect king. Because in the Bhagavatam we learn how to be a perfect husband, how to be a perfect wife, how to be a perfect child, a perfect mother, a perfect father. We understand what is the perfection of human society from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So how do we understand what is a perfect ruler? We study the lives of Yudhisthira Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, Preetam Maharaj, Swayambhuva Manu, Lord Ramachandra. All these great personalities appear within the Bhagavad Gita to teach us what is actual human civilization and what is the example that we must follow. So next week, on Monday night, we'll begin chapter 16. We'll go from chapter 16 to 23, which shows the entire pastime of Preetam Maharaj, from chapter 13 to 23, and then an examination will be on chapters 13 to 23. Because many of the chapters are not so technical, so we can do like that. No, we start 16 next week, but the exam will go from 13 to 23, because we already did 13, 14 and 15 last year. We'll aim to have the exam around about the end of March, beginning of April. But we'll see when we finish, but it will be sometime like that. But your closed book examinations, your open book examinations are due on the 1st of April. So it gives you 2 months. I think that should be enough time for you. 500 words. Not 5,000. You don't have to write the Mahabharata again. It's already been written. Okay, so before you go, you please put your names on the registration sheet. Also at the farm, I'm doing a fundraising event. We need to buy a new ride-on lawnmower. So far we've raised $3,000 and we would like some more contributions. The mower that we need to buy costs around about $6,000. So if any devotees feel inspired, please let us know and we can purchase a nice ride-on mower for the farm. I spoke to Anuruddha Prabhu the other day. He said this is okay. We'll issue proper receipts and everything like that. So if anyone is inspired to do this service, then please see us and then we'll buy a nice mower for the farm. Because I can't use a hand mower because the farm's a little bit too big to mow everything. So we have to buy a proper mower. So if anyone feels inspired, then you can do like that. So I'll give this to Ananda Ballabha Prabhu. Please
give him your name and we'll write it for him. Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Jai.
See you next week, Ki.
Jai.